calling me fat, it would not have resonated the powerful way it did. I believe in those words that I said on my talk show just as much today as I did when I first said them more than 10 years ago. And just in case you weren't there back then to experience the moment, and even if you were, I'm bringing it to you right here, right now. This is what I said. I love my mama. She has helped me to be a strong woman so I can overcome these kind of attacks. But if I had lower self-esteem, I would probably be starving myself right now. But that's exactly what is happening to other women all over this country. So I have something to say to all of you that have something nasty to say about me or other women who are built like me, women whose names you know, women whose names you don't, women who've been picked on, women whose husbands put them down, women at work, or girls in school. I have one thing to say to you. Kiss my fat ass.
This epic moment was a culmination of all that I had worked so hard to instill in Tyra. She had sprouted her own wings and was flying high, fat ass and all.
Five essential Tyra tips for better body image. Number one, make a list of what you love about your body. Add something new every month. Sit down and take the time to do this. Get a pen and paper and set a timer for 5 minutes. Write down as many things as you can think of that you like about yourself. And it's okay if it's just one. Then post that list somewhere you'll see it every day, like on the bathroom mirror. Once a month, revisit the list and add something new. Number two, self-care, boo. Get your nails did, get your hair did, take a bubble bath, take a long nap, eat a cupcake, binge a season of Big Little Lies. Or Top Model, just saying. Read an entire book in one sitting. Spend some time alone. Whatever it is that makes you feel good and rested, carve out the time to do it. Number three, fake it till you make it. Pretend you're confident and love your body. Next time you're at the pool, stroll around without a cover-up instead of hiding behind a towel. Do all the things you think a body-confident woman would do, and you might start believing yourself. Number four, stop talking ish about other women. If you find yourself wanting to criticize the way someone else looks, just stop. Change the subject, or even better, say something nice. And number five, ditch the triggers. Try to cut out the things and people that make you feel bad. If you have a 105-pound friend who's always talking about how she could lose a few, take a break. Maybe she's not your best going out to dinner buddy. If Instagram makes you feel sad, stop the scroll. Choose healthy over skinny. My weight is like Cardi B's beautiful booty while she's twerking. It goes up and it goes down and then back up and then back down over and over again. And to be honest, my mood is happiest when I'm up. I know right now you're like, what? But let me explain. I'm happiest bigger because I'm not restricting myself at all. For me, food is pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I have never done drugs. So food is my vice. When I'm thick, you better damn well believe that I am celebrating like it's my birthday at every damn meal.
Tyra and I are both ice cream addicts. No matter what city or country we're in, we'll find the top ice cream parlor. In New York, we used to go to the bodega and get about 8 different kinds, then take those bad boys back to her condo. We wouldn't even put them in a bowl. We'd just line them up on the sink like piano keys, get a spoon, and travel the counter of pints. We've had some of our best business ideas playing ice cream keyboards. In fact, I think the idea for her to do her own swimsuit calendar and to do 2 versions, an edgy one and a commercial one, came from those ice cream musical sessions. I'm lactose intolerant now, so if I eat ice cream, I'll have an upset stomach and be running to the powder room all night. But I eat it anyway. Pun intended.
When I was growing up, we'd go to the Häagen-Dazs shop on Hollywood Boulevard every weekend. I'll eat almost any ice cream flavor as long as there's no chocolate in it.
Yeah, I'm the fool who doesn't like chocolate, but I ain't mad at cookies and cream. Just give it to me, baby. And I like my cream straight up. No cone. For the specialty boutique places like Salt and Straw, McConnell's, and Jenny's, I will stand in line and wait and wait. I don't care if there are 30 people in front of me. I'll stand there all anxious like I'm there waiting for the Black Friday sale to drop. When I was at my biggest, I would get dessert, usually ice cream, after lunch and dinner. And like I said, I felt great. But now as I say this, I've dropped a few pounds. Why? I've got this old ankle injury that keeps recurring, and the last time I twisted it was on the set of Drake's Child's Play video. Oh, Tyra, you gotta see the instant replay of your cheesecake smush face moment, said one of Drake's boys to me. I ran to the monitor before they were about to turn it off, and twist, it happened again. And I woke up the next morning with more pain than ever before. If you caught me running onto the America's Got Talent stage to give an impromptu makeover on my debut episode in unsexy white sneakers, blame the ankle. But don't blame sexy Aubrey Drake Graham. Ain't his fault. My doctor said if I drop some weight, along with doing rigorous physical therapy, my ankle will heal faster, better, stronger. So I've been going to cycling classes, balancing in yoga classes, doing Pilates, and yeah, eating healthier. I'm more energetic and my ankle is so much healthier. And yeah, that feels good too. Sometimes my mom and I get into it over healthy eating. She eats anything and everything she wants. She's a cheeseburger, fries, and shake 3 times a week kind of eater, whereas I'm now more of the burger and no bun kind of girl. But damn it, I want my mama to be healthy. I had my son when I was older, and I want her to be around to watch him grow up because York is obsessed with his Nana. We were FaceTiming with York recently, and she told me that she'd had pancakes and bacon for breakfast. Again. Choose life, not bacon slice, I yelled. Oh, psh, she responded. Bacon ain't kill nobody but the pig. Bacon no Bobby pig, repeated Grandma's number one fan, a.k.a. York. I respect my mama more than anyone, but she knows that ain't true. And now I gotta unteach my little pumpkin this at the same time I'm trying to get him to think lima beans and rutabaga are the most delicious things on the planet so that I can airplane another spoonful into his mouth for dinner.
After my early teen years, I had a slim, tight waistline. But now I have all these bloops. One muffin top on top of another on top of another. Tyra's always trying to help pull my shirt out of waist creases because it gets stuck in the dents. So one day I said, well, let me show you something I can do that none of you can. Child, I held my arms up and started leaning from side to side and did a whole routine with accordion sounds coming out of my mouth.
I cannot believe you are playing your body, Mama,
Tyra said. Every negative you can turn into a positive, I said, and just kept right on playing my body accordion. Hey, you, listening to this book right now, you got some rolls around your middle? Show your hidden talents, baby, and strike up a tune for the kiddies. They'll love it.
Remember when I told you my mama is crazy? The body accordion just backs me up. Ma is disgusted, or at least pretends to be, by anything that is healthy. I mentioned the need for her to drink more water last year, and you know what she said? Water.
Ugh.
What? But honestly, I get it. A lot of it is a generational thing. 20 years from now, York will probably come to me saying, Mom, why are you eating that quinoa and that kale? That's disgusting. Don't you know that can kill you? You need to make your salad with these fermented, oxygenated bubble gut greens that come from the droppings of a Himalayan mountain goat. And I'll look at him and go, get the hell out of my face, boy. Kale ain't kill nobody but the leaf. But the difference with me is I'll probably eat the goat poop.
Goodness gracious. Listening to this chapter, I sound insane in the membrane. I love all my grandbabies and want to live to see my newest one give his mama hell like she gave me. So maybe I'll trade in this slice of streaky fatty bacon for the healthier Canadian kind. And these buttermilk pancakes with extra syrup can be swapped for some naturally sweet Scandinavian crackers. Does it taste as good? Almost. But is it time for a change? Hail to the yes. So thank you, Ty Ty, for mothering your mama and introducing me to healthy choices that tickle my taste buds, and for making me see the Skim Low-Cal Light. Light. But 2 liters of water a day? Lord help me.
Non-skinny people who I think are sexy as hell. I like a bit of booty on my models, my missies, my matrons, and my men. And I think these people are some fine-ass human beings. Ashley Graham. This statuesque supermodel stunner is also my new America's Next Top Model judge and my girl. She's the queen of the curvalistas. Zach Miko. The first supermodel to come out of Brawn, which is IMG's plus-size male model division. Chiseled, chunky, and oh-so-funky, and oh-so-fine as hell. Christina Hendricks, a redhead with curves so hot they could start fires. Kate Upton, my Sports Illustrated cover girl sister from another mister. Vince Vaughn, 6'5 and looking good, boo. No bean poles here. Amber Rose, a beauty and a booty on a mission to stop slut-shaming. I can definitely get behind that behind. Dasha Palenko, orange is the new black, and bootyful is the new beautiful. The bearded man in the plaid shirt who was sitting next to me at a Malibu cafe while I typed. Damn, your thick lumber sexual ass is fine, boo. Chapter 10. Learn something from this.
You cannot protect your children from everything. You've got to let them bump into walls sometimes, because that's the only way they're going to learn. So when Tyra came to me and said she was going to add singing to her body of talents, I had instant visions of her smashing into a concrete wall like one of those crash test dummies.
It wasn't because I wanted to sing that I decided I wanted to be a singer. I wanted to make music videos and perform live, get the crowd on their feet and have them yelling and losing their mind. J-Lo was doing it and killing it big time, and she didn't start her career as a singer, so why couldn't I? And yeah, I know what you're thinking. Tyra, why do you think you can sing when you never sang before? Well, I had experience. My rap name was Ty Lokeski Mac Dog, and I even wrote my own rap, which I still know today and plan to perform at York's 18th birthday party. It went a little something like this. I'm 34A, but that's okay, cause the rest of my body is just touche. I'm 5'9", I look so fine, yes, all my fellas are so divine. When I'm finished with this, you might as well just dismiss all the other female rappers, cause you're just pissed. My eyes so green, they look so keen, if you have one look, you know what I mean. My hair so brown, it is always down, and on my face, there never is a frown. When you and I meet, you will not stand, so get on your knees and kiss Ty's hand. Go Tyra, get busy, go Tyra, woo! Oh, yeah, okay, so it was the 9th grade, all right? And I just wrote that rap because I was lost in algebra and took a little break from trying to figure out what the X is when 5(3)-(4)(5x+5)(13). Yeah, I probably should have stopped right there.
Tyra could carry a tune. I had to give her that. She could also dance really well, even though she wasn't Janet Jackson. But I knew that if she wanted to be a singer, she was going to have to be a damn good singer, because she wasn't going to be able to sneak into the back door. No, if Miss Tyra Banks, supermodel, decided to sing, the spotlight was going to be on her from the first note. And if she sounded more like a screech owl than a songbird, she was never going to live it down. I was on pins and needles from the first time she mentioned singing, but I always told my children that I would support them no matter what they decided to do, even if what I thought they decided to do was, a stretch. When Tyra came to me and said she was setting up meetings with music producers, all I did was nod my head. Mm-hmm, I said. Have they heard you sing? They had not.
When I decide something, I go hard. I don't just dip in a pedicured pinky. I belly flop. I have tunnel vision. And from the moment I decided I was gonna be a singer, it became my obsession. You can do anything if you put your mind to it, right? Well, maybe. I got a leading vocal coach and started taking lessons with him 3 times a week. Ashley Simpson had the time slot right before me, so I could hear her finishing up when I arrived. She sounded good. I'd sit there, listening to her with sweat dripping in my armpits. I knew I didn't sound half as good as she did, but still, when her time was up and I was on, Ashley and I would exchange pleasantries in the waiting room, then I'd go in there and not so pleasantly sing my ass off for my coach. Nothing about it felt natural, and it wasn't fun. I was stretching and straining, trying to hit notes like my life depended on it. When I'd leave, I'd think, you know, this whole being a singer thing would work out great if I just didn't have to sing. I wanted that Milli Vanilli kind of career. Really, was lip-syncing to somebody else's voice so bad? As soon as word got out that I was considering embarking on a music career, I had some of the best producers and songwriters in the world agreeing to work with me. My access to top-level talent was astounding. Was it because I had the voice of an angel? Hell no. It was because I was a Victoria's Secret angel. When they heard me sing, they weren't hearing notes. Perhaps they were hearing potential banknotes. I had been nominated for a Teen Choice Award that year for Best Model. And while I was sitting in the audience, I got to talking with Kobe Bryant, who was sitting in the row behind me. What you doing this summer? He asked me. Oh, nothing, I said. Just traveling a ton for modeling. What about you? I'm cutting an album. I about jumped out my damn award show chair. Get me on it, I said. Let me sing on it. I can sing, and I'll even do it for free. For free, he said. Oh, yeah, for free, for free. Cut to a few days later, and I'm all up in the studio singing the hook on Kobe's first single, which is called K-O-B-E. My chorus goes a little something like this. K-O-B-E-I-L-O-V-E-U. And I think you are very fine. If you give me one chance, I promise to love you and be with you forevermore. His A&R guy was freaking out about how good my singing was. We had a hit on our hands. The single turned into more than I imagined. We even shot a fancy music video with super director Hype Williams and were scheduled to perform the song live at the NBA All-Star Weekend. I wore this little H2T denim outfit and I sang my heart out, telling K-O-B-E how much I L-O-V-E'd him, but I could feel myself getting more and more nervous as the song went on. This was my chance to show the world I could sing, but the camera was barely on me. Whenever it would turn my way, it just stayed on me for a few seconds. What the hell, I thought. Am I blowing it? At the end of the performance, I found out why. It wasn't my singing that the camera hated. It was the busted zipper on my Canadian tuxedo that split wide open. They were just trying to do me a favor and not put my panties on display on live TV. Whoops. Regardless of my bikini bottom problems, my boy Kobe's rap debut didn't go over too well. And the single kind of got panned. In hindsight, we probably should have seen that coming. A super athlete and a supermodel? Well, those two supers cancel each other out, and all you're left with is a serious lack of music cred. Sorry, Kobe. I wish I would have been seated at a different part of the theater at Teen Choice, because I would have not had the opportunity to screw up your dream. Where was Lil' Kim when you needed her? Well, at least you didn't have to pay me, right?
Too many people stick to the path they know just because they're scared of failing if they go in a different direction. As much as I didn't think that Tyra's singing career was the right different direction, I was proud of her for taking risks and being fearless about it. I've been there before myself and knew from experience that sometimes you just have to see for yourself whether or not something will work out. When I was working at the Hospital of the Good Samaritan as the head of the medical media department, I was in a restaurant and got to talking to a woman who ran a portrait photography business It was kind of like glamour shots, and she was about to open up a new studio in Los Angeles. "You should come work for us," she said. "You're a photographer. You've done some fashion work. You could be a store manager. We'll put you in charge." Now, I had some experience shooting fashion lookbooks and headshots for actors and models, so this portrait business seemed like a great way for me to try something new. I walked out of there thinking, store manager. I like this idea. But nobody else did. "Carolyn, are you sure?" my friend Jackie asked. "You'd have to work with people in the mall. It'd be a lot of customer service, and I know you don't like that." What does Jackie know, I thought, even though she and I had been best friends since we were 14, and she always knew me better than I knew myself. So I quit my great job as director of the medical media department at the hospital and headed to the mall. Jackie was right. I did not like customer service. People complained all day long. They didn't like their makeup, or they liked their makeup but hated their photos. One woman even ran out of the store without paying, and the employees looked at me like, "Ain't you the manager? Go chase that pitcher pay ditcher down." I thought as I watched the woman's backside disappear past the food court. Run, Forrest, run! Maybe this wasn't my dream job after all. I dusted myself off, polished my resume again, and went and got a new job. Specifically, a new old job. I slipped right back to being the head medical photographer at Good Samaritan. I walked back in there on my second first day with my head held high. There ain't no shame in my failing game.
Okay, when I talk about how bad I was at singing, I'm overstating it a bit. I don't think droves of people would have been booing me off stage. They just wouldn't have been buying tickets to the next show. I knew about harmony and melody, and I was actually a pretty more than decent songwriter. Sometimes I could even pass for a pretty more than decent singer if you caught me in just the right moment. For example, when I got on the phone with Pharrell, yes, Pharrell, that Pharrell, we were vibing immediately. "I want to hear you sing," he said. "Great." I was so excited. "When do you want to meet up?" "No," he said, "right now. I want to hear you sing right now on the phone." Oh, shoot. Okay, no big deal. I could do this. I reached deep down, pulled it together, and belted out a Brandy song because I loved me some Brandy. And since I wasn't looking right at him, I could just pretend Pharrell wasn't there and I was just singing along to some hold music from the cable company. When I finished, he was actually impressed. "Oh my God," he said, "you're not Whitney Houston, but you can carry a tune. Like for real. Let's do this." Yes, this was really happening. I was going to work with Pharrell. Then I got in his studio and fell on my face.
I tried so hard to get Tyra to sing like she wasn't a serious singer. "You need to have a voice that's affected," I told her.
"What does that mean, Ma?"
"You know, like high pitch, nasal, cute. And maybe sometimes you can talk instead of sing. Let's focus on how you're going to come across on stage. More emphasis on performing," I said, "and less emphasis on singing."
I was a nervous mess when I got in the studio with Pharrell. He had a backup singer there, but soon it was more like she was there to sing the lead, and I was supposed to provide background vocals for her. Pharrell and most music producers works with all kinds of people in the waiting room and studio, and in that room alone, there were probably more people than had ever heard me sing before in my entire life. I was sure that each and every one of them was laughing at me between takes. Also, singing to Pharrell on the phone? No problem. Singing to his face? That was a whole different story. Plus, he's gorgeous. That skin that looks like butterscotch satin and those Marcona almond-shaped eyes. So that didn't help. So let's just say I was far from feeling happy. See what I did there? Anyway, the song he had for me was called Playboy. I can remember the lyrics and melody like it was yesterday. But I ain't gonna sing. But the lyrics went something like, "Playboy, we gonna have some big fun tonight. Playboy. And if it feels good, then please don't pay attention. Let's just ride Playboy." As I was singing the song and actually writing this book, I felt like I was sounding pretty good. I was breathing properly, holding the notes, adding a little vibrato, and doing a few vocal tricks. That's because Pharrell was not in front of me. This lets me know I needed the show The Voice to exist back then. I can imagine facing away from the singing star mentors and just belting Playboy at the top of my lungs and killing it. And then Pharrell would hit his buzzer, his big red chair would turn around, and he'd be like, oh my God, it's Ty Ty. What up, girl? Let's go to the studio now and lay this club banger down. Oh, needless to say, that day in Pharrell's studio was a complete disaster, and Playboy never saw the light of day. Cue sad face emoji.
We later went and met with David Foster, who'd worked with people like Michael Jackson and Celine Dion. He's talking about Tyra's stage presence and how if she can bring what she has on the runway to her songs, then she's going to be a superstar. The whole time, my stomach is flip-flopping. Then he gets up and goes over to his piano. He sits down and taps out some notes. Okay, Miss Tyra, sing for me. Tyra looks like she just swallowed a bug.
You mean now?
Yeah, now, he says with a smile. Give me the money note.
Mr. Foster?
Tyra says.
I can't do that.
Sure you can, he says, his fingers dancing up and down the keys like he's done this a million times before, because he probably has. Just blast it. Let it out. Give it to me. Tyra won't do it. Can't do it. So David has an idea. Tyra, I'll create a song for you, and you can come back and sing it in my Malibu studio, he offers. Maybe you'll be more comfy in a booth. Oh, Lord, here we go again.
To save a lot of time, let's just say the Foster session was similar to Pharrell's, minus about 10 people. However, I did finish the song. The lyrics went something like this. Our first kiss won't be the last, and la 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 la. I can't remember that part. And good things come to those who have to wait. It was kind of an innocent song, but my voice was kind of guilty. Guilty of being kind of talentless. David sweetly passed on making me his mega pop star of the world. But did that stop me? Sadly, no.
Mr. Hitmaker Foster was a class act. He had high hopes for Ty, but was so gracious with his no. And for being so kind and gentle with my baby, I thank him. Tyra had a house in Orlando, and we would spend lots of time there, especially since it was so close to Disney World, and Tyra was obsessed with that place. We would sit on the porch of her house on the lake, hear the bullfrogs croaking, and watch the Disney fireworks go off every night at 9 o'clock on the dot. She started to spend more and more time in Orlando so she could work on her music with leading music industry peeps based there. And she even got signed to Britney Spears and NSYNC's music manager's company. She got to working with a few songwriters and producers down there, and I knew I hated the music industry when I realized that they thought it was totally acceptable to schedule meetings for midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. The area where Tyra lived was so rural that there weren't even streetlights, and it backed up to a nature preserve that was home to all kinds of critters that made your skin crawl. So there we were, driving into the night on these pitch-black streets so Tyra could record her demo, just hoping we didn't hit an alligator or a wild boar along the way.
In Orlando, I had worked a lot with a singer-songwriter named Billy Lawrence, and when I was in the studio with Billy, I was fine. She was my homegirl, and I sang my heart out to her. I guess I felt safe because we hung out all the time chilling and eating at places like Joe's Crab Shack and Shoney's, so there was no pressure. I knew she was going to help me out a bit, a lot, and auto-tune the crap out of my voice, but I didn't care. I was having fun with my buddy. Wyclef was another story altogether. I was introduced to him by some friends, and he was warm and sweet and did his best to make me feel comfortable. But once I entered his New York City vocal booth, I again got so nervous. I was in the studio with Mr. Fugees, and I felt like I didn't have any air in my lungs. The song he wrote for me was called Why Does It Hurt So Bad? I could barely eke out a squeak, and that hurt so bad.
Eventually, I got in the studio with major music producer Rodney Jerkins. I was ecstatic. He was the man responsible for Brandy's signature sound. With Rodney, I gotta admit, I sounded hella good. To this day, I don't know how he got the vocals out of me like he did. I think a big part of it was the magical touch of his vocal producer, LaShawn Daniels. LaShawn told me that when I sang, I enunciated too much. I'd pronounce every single syllable, which he said made me sound like a stiff, proper lady with a stick up her butt. And no one wanted to hear a proper lady sing on pop radio. LaShawn coached me to sing with the smooth sound of where I was from. Englewood, baby. He was a master. He taught me to write down all the lyrics of every song in phonetic slang. So if you looked at the paper, it looked like I was slightly illiterate. But when they played it back to me, it sounded so good. Lyrics that were written, I love you, so let me see what you are working with, became, I love you, so let me see what you're working with. It sounded so fly when I sang it. It sounded unbelievable. I was like, wait a second, is that me on that track? Plus, I did all my background vocals on every song. Rodney was a friggin' genius. I ended up doing about 10 songs with him and his Dark Child crew. And I felt like it was time. Time to go public.
Tara had the grand idea to use America's Next Top Model's power platform to launch this friggin' music career. Hold on to your seats. We're getting close to that concrete wall.
Besides, the public had been hearing me sing for years on America's Next Top Model. They just didn't know it. All those na-na-na-na-na-na on the theme song from cycle one to more than 20 cycles later, that's your girl. Yeah, it's me. I'd been in the studio with the Top Model music producers when they were composing it, and I got in the booth to show them what I wanted. I was like, we need a girl singer who can do these na-na-na-nas just like this, I said. And I sang it, and they looked at each other, and then they looked back at me. You're here. Why don't we just have you do it? So I did. And people loved that theme song. That was proof that I had something, right? By the way, the new network replaced the Na 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 theme song in cycle 23. But when I came back to Top Model for 24, I rallied hard to pepper them back in. Yeah, I did that for you. I wanted to debut my singing career with a mid-tempo jam called Driving Me Crazy to really show the people what I could do. But Rodney's the expert, and he picked a song called Shake Your Body. So yes, we shot a video for it on Top Model Cycle 2. I have to tell you that to this day, I still think that video was slamming. The final six girls from that cycle all had starring roles. We shot some of it in front of a massive waterfall that the world didn't know was really located in a New York City Chinese tchotchke shop. Though you would never know it, because it looked like we pulled out all the stops. It looked like it cost a legitimate $300,000, which was the price for nice videos at that time, even though we only spent $30,000, the price of a photo shoot. We shot the whole episode and dedicated it to the making and world premiere of that video, and it finally aired on Top Model months later. Now get this. It was the highest rated episode we'd ever had. Still is to this day, actually. Can you believe it? That was major. I got beyond excited. The people want me to sing, said the devil on my shoulder. But do they really? Said the angel on the other, aka my mama. And that got me thinking. I wondered, did people tune in mass because they wanted to see me sing? Or because they were hoping for a car crash. Still, I was going to give singing one more go for the thing I loved the most, Disney.
Oh gosh, did that girl love Disney. When she was a child, we had to keep any Disney trips a secret. Because if Tyra knew about them too far in advance, she'd get so excited that she wouldn't sleep for weeks. Going to Disney was always an ordeal. You parked in Dumbo F95. Which must stand for 95 miles to the ticket window, and then spent a whole month's wages on admission. Don't worry, I'd whisper to my husband as we forked over the cash. We can always sell the car as soon as we get back home. But it was worth it just to see Tyra so happy. As soon as she got through those gates, it was as if she had entered a magical, transformative world. Her whole demeanor changed. She didn't walk, but skipped everywhere, talked in the voices and accents of all the characters she came across, and scarfed down all the ice cream bars, caveman-sized drumsticks, and churros she could get her hands on. And this was pre-Fast Pass, but it didn't matter how long those damn lines were. She was in heaven.
I can't really overstate how much I love Disney. Saying I love Disney gets close, but still doesn't cut it because all those extra O's don't reflect just how much of an influence it has had on me. We went as a family when my parents were married, but when they separated, my pop's divorced dad guilt kicked in and he would take me to Disneyland all the time. Those multiple trips got me obsessed with immersive experiences and the power of a strong, positive brand. Sound, sight, taste, touch, smell. Disney didn't just entertain. It downright surprised, delighted, and dazzled all my senses. The one bummer for me, though, was the whole princess thing. I mean, look at the Disney princesses of the 1980s. I looked nothing like Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, or Cinderella. And because of that, I knew I could never grow up and play a part in their famous Main Street Electrical Parade. They were all white, and not just Caucasian, but never seen the sun or even a bronzer brush alabaster. While most kids left Disney with huge smiles on their faces, I was always on the verge of tears when we'd walk away from that spectacular electrical parade at the end of the night. I can't be a princess, Daddy. I can't be on top of the float, I'd sob. I have to be one of the dancing ladies on the ground. So when Disney announced that they were doing The Princess and the Frog, and Princess Tiana was black, I damn near leapt off my lily pad. Oh my God, I screamed to any and everyone who would listen. I can be this princess. She's black. She's from Louisiana. I can do accents. I can sound younger. I was made to be a cartoon character. Through all my yapping, I finally got an audition. And I killed it. Killed it enough to get a callback, which was where I really let loose. I did my lines to a T. And then when they wanted ad-libs, I was pulling out every southern trick in the book. You best bring them beignets over here, boy. And that swamp be full of gators. I ain't going in there. LaShawn would have been proud. Then when they wanted me to play the frog Tiana turns into, I was ribbiting all over the place like I just swallowed a teacup of tadpoles. I really went for it, and they were really impressed. Wow, you're really good, Tiana, said one of the casting directors. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. He called me the character's name, I shrieked in my head. I was flying high. I knew it was in the bag when they offered to take me on a tour of the animation studio, and I was happier than I'd been since waiting an hour and a half for Space Mountain. There were different renderings of Tiana and the frog all throughout the animation studio, some done on computers, some done by hand, some with short legs, some with long. There was the town where the story took place, and even a drawing of Tiana's mom right next to a photo of Oprah. I felt like I was getting a real peek behind the scenes. Oh my God, I thought. They're doing this because they want me to see what my character is going to look like. I bet they're analyzing me so that the frog has some of my features. You know they like the animated animals to sometimes kind of look like the real people playing them. Everyone is coming up to me to introduce themselves, and we're all laughing, getting to know each other, and talking about how great my accent was and how strong I ribbited in the audition. I was having so much fun that I wasn't paying attention to where we were going until we ended up at a piano. I saw it, and all I thought was, oh, cool, they've got a piano. This place has everything. Yeah, it still wasn't hitting me. I was still on my Disney cloud. Then someone introduced me to the pianist. Tyra, pick a song. Any Disney song, he said. What? Smiling faces surrounded me. We just want to hear you sing, someone said. So go ahead, whenever you're ready. Wait, why do I have to sing, I thought. Did Cameron Diaz sing in Shrek? Can't somebody else do the songs? Finally, I was able to buy myself some time. They still wanted me to sing, but they were going to let me prepare something for them and sing it later.
I rushed out of there, determined not to let my Disney princess dreams die.
Tara was so, so happy when she was in the mega-hit Disney TV movie Life Size. Girls around the world are obsessed with the doll-come-to-life character she played, Eve. But she really, really wanted to get the part of the frog princess. This was the time Tara's overly enunciating Broadway-style singing would have been spot on, and she could sound so sweet and youthful. Her voice has always sounded much younger than she is. Besides, it would have made up for all those times I had to drag a crying little girl back to Dumbo F95 at the end of the electrical parade.
Back at my house, I was trying. I was singing Someday My Prince Will Come, and I'm Wishing, and I was trying to get all those ah-ha-ha-ha-ha trills, and I was failing. Big time. I call up my friend, super producer and recording artist Kenneth Edmonds, a.k.a. Babyface, and I almost cried to him about it. They want me to sing, and I want to impress them. What do I do? He told me to calm down and come to his studio. When I got there, he'd written a whole damn song for me to sing about a girl and a frog in New Orleans. It had this sweet, swamp-like, laid-back vibe to it, but it was still quintessentially Disney princess. It was bananas. To be clear, bananas to me means amazing. He kept humming and singing it to me and trying to get me to sing it back with a full and strong voice. I just couldn't get it right, no matter how much I practiced. Okay, so I'm totally incapable of singing your genius of a song, I said. But you wrote an original Disney song for me in the span of a few hours, and that's beyond dope, and you should send it to them. I don't think he ever submitted the song, but he should have. Did I say it was bananas? I kept trying and trying different songs and working with my vocal coach until I was finally able to lay down that famed Pocahontas song, Colors of the Wind. The movie version, not the silky, soulful Vanessa Williams one, which I love too. And I sent it to Disney. My fingers were crossed and I was holding my breath and turning blue. Then I got the phone call of phone calls. It was down to me and two other voices, both of whom were singers. One was a very famous singer from American Idol and a dream girl. The other was also a dream girl. Two dream girls, real singers. Damn it. But still, I was hopeful. Those girls could sing, but what if they couldn't rib it? And certainly they couldn't want it as badly as I did, right? I practically came out of the womb wearing mouse ears. I was born to play this role. I was so excited. I didn't sleep while I waited for the call. Every time the phone started ringing, I'd race across the room, vault the couch, and swing from the chandelier to answer it on the second ring. Hello? Disney? I'd breathlessly say into the receiver. No, it's the dry cleaner, the voice on the other end would say. Your shirts are ready. Ribbit. What? Never mind, thank you. I'll pick them up later. Finally, I got the call. I held my breath while they told me the news I had never hoped for. Princess Tiana would be played by Anika Noni Rose, a real dream girl. My dream was over. Done. Was not gonna happen. I was devastated. Did this mean I'd put all those lily pads in the pool for nothing? Can't they just get Anika to do the songs and I'll be the acting voice, I asked. I was okay with sharing. I had my agent call and call and call until finally she said, Tyra, it's done. They're moving on. And you should too. Not long after I realized I was not going to be the princess or even the frog, I was having lunch with my music manager, Benny Medina. Benny was the third music manager I'd had. Three managers, still no album. But I was hopeful. Benny had worked with J-Lo, so if he could help her become a pop star, maybe he could do it for me. Tyra, I just want to check in and make sure I'm doing my job to your satisfaction, he said as I scarfed down my Caesar salad. I want you to be happy and on the right path. So, humor me.
Imagine that you're walking into this restaurant a year from now. What do you want all these important people to think when they see Tyra Banks come through that door? We were at the Ivy, one of the most industry and celebrity-heavy restaurants in L.A. As I looked around, I could see people who were super influential in fashion, film, TV, music, and business. Yeah, I knew that they were the important people, but I realized they weren't the main people I wanted to impress. In fact, in that moment, it hit me. I wanted to do more than just impress people. I wanted to connect with people deeply. I want people to feel power when I walk in, I told Benny. But not the power that most people understand. Power doesn't just come from money and success. I think true power comes from being someone who speaks up about things that matter and works to make crappy things they see in the world better. I want to be a force for positive change. I want to make people feel better about themselves and show them that they are not alone. Benny smiled and took a sip of his iced tea. Then why the hell aren't you doing a talk show? He said. In that moment, something in my brain clicked in a way it hadn't since I'd first had the idea for America's Next Top Model, standing right there in my kitchen in my underwear. You can model, do top model, your music, and do a talk show, Benny continued. I nodded, but inside, I'd already made up my mind. Mama always said that in addition to having tunnel vision and focus, you need to have time to sit and do nothing so you can hear what your next moves should be to reach the pinnacle of success. Well, it was time I started listening. A couple of days later, Benny received a phone call from me. Hi, Benny. I want to stop singing. What? Yep. I'm going to put all of my energy into creating a kick-ass, game-changing talk show.
I think your gut instinct is usually the right one. With Tyra, I think she always knew she wasn't supposed to be a singer, but she's not a quitter, so it took her a while to let that mic drop without picking it up again. When she finally did hit the brakes on her singing career and called to tell me she was done, I did a secret happy dance. I could finally take a full breath again after all those months of biting my tongue and gritting my teeth every time someone asked her for the money note. Tyra wasn't meant to be the next Katy Perry or J-Lo, but the girl could talk and had a gift for helping people see the inner and outer beauty they couldn't see in themselves.
I do think I was talented when it came to music. My talents just didn't lie on the mic. I was more of a behind-the-scenes girl. I wrote the theme song to the short-lived Fab Life talk show and co-produced all the Top Model theme song remixes. In my time, I think I wrote some damn good songs, if I do say so myself. I teamed up with Big Bert, a producer who was dating Brandy at the time, to write a song called Beautiful Girl. He had made this gorgeous melody, and we sat up in the studio until the wee hours of the morning eating crab and garlic noodles from one of my fave spots, Crustacean, while he played it on a loop and I wrote the lyrics. It was all about how women should cherish the beauty of their soul and resist the pressure to be perfect, a theme that should sound very familiar to you by now. I still think the world needs to hear this song, just not with me singing it. With someone like Rihanna, or maybe like, I don't know, Rihanna? So what do you think, world? I mean, Rihanna, should we put it out there? Hey, Rihanna girl, DM me. You ain't gonna be disappointed. But when I started pre-production of my talk show, I went all in. I put those singing dreams so far up on that shelf that I would have needed a 100-foot stepladder to get them down again. I was told that 90% of talk shows failed before the first season even wrapped. If I wanted my show to succeed, I needed to live it and breathe it. So I moved out of my huge Beverly Hills house into a tiny apartment across the street from the talk show studio. Shortly after that, my idol and hero, Oprah, threw her famous 3-days-long Legends Ball at her sprawling home in Montecito, California. She invited and celebrated women like Coretta Scott King, Maya Angelou, and Naomi Sims as the Legends, and also included what she referred to as Youngins, Legends of the Future. When I opened the most beautifully crafted and illustrious invitation I have ever received in the mail and saw that Miss Winfrey considered me a youngin', I was speechless. To be recognized by Oprah and to be surrounded by such incredible women was one of the most awe-inspiring experiences of my life. At the dreamlike luncheon on the first day, Oprah had this new singer she'd discovered perform, and he was just wonderful. John Legend, I remember thinking. His voice is amazing. I'm going to have to remember that name in case he gets big. Day 2 was a white tie ball with a black and white dress code. You had to wear black or white. Oprah laid down that law. And there's Toni Morrison over there and Rosa Parks over there. And I'm intimidated just to be standing in the same room with all these, well, living legends. Oprah was the only person who wore red, and she looked like a rare, beautiful ruby fluttering throughout the party, never resting, constantly producing to make sure everything was running on point. "Oh my God, you look like a princess," she said when I entered the ballroom as she hugged me. "You know what, Tyra? Better yet, a queen. If I couldn't be a Disney princess, being an Oprah queen was the next best thing." Nah, it was better. At the ball, this young senator gave an incredible speech without even reading anything off a teleprompter, and there was hardly a dry eye in the place because he was speaking so raw, so real, and from the heart. I can be a little shy in places like this, and after dinner, my wacky friend dragged me out of my chair to dance and work the room. Eventually, we made our way over to the senator, and my buddy was being her fun, wild self and talking to him like she'd known him her entire life. She may have dropped a few expletives here and there, too. She had me blushing through my bronzer. "Oh my God, girl, this man is important." And when she walked away, I apologized to him in case she'd offended him. "What, you think I've never heard those words before?" he said with a laugh. He was the nicest, realest politician I'd ever met. "Huh," I thought as I walked away from our conversation. "Barack Obama. I better remember that name, too." The closing event of the weekend was a Sunday brunch, and for this we were allowed to bring a date. I, of course, brought my date for life, my mama. Across all her sprawling acres, Oprah had set up picnic tables full of barbecue and other tasty tidbits. But the highlight came before the food. A gospel revival concert helmed by B.B. Winans, who I am low-key obsessed with. His voice is one of my all-time faves. At some point, they started singing a classic gospel song called Changed, and it was clear that everybody knew the words. B.B. started passing the mic. He passed it to Shirley Caesar, who tore it up. "He changed me," she sang at the top of her lungs. Then Dionne Warwick was on deck. "Woo, yes, child." Then Yolanda Adams sang, girl, sang. As Usher looked on, the mic then went to Chaka Khan. Let me rock you, Chaka Khan. Gladys Knight then took control and put some pip in all of our steps. Valerie Simpson did her thing while her husband cheered her on. And Patti LaBelle took us home, baby. Mama was sitting next to me, crying and clapping along and having the time of her life. That is when something dawned on me. Something horrible. "Mama, oh my God," I said as soon as the song was over. "If I had a hit song on the radio right now, they would have passed that mic to me."
"If they would have passed that mic to Tyra, I would have done what any good mother would do, created a distraction and told her ass to run."
That moment,
there with my mom in the presence of my idol Oprah and so many other greats was the moment when everything was so clear to me. I realized just how strong one could be if they focused on their strengths. Yes, we all have dreams and fantasies and desires, and those are all worth exploring. But I now see that we shouldn't blindly force it. Listen to your gut, because it usually knows what's up. The downside of being really driven is that sometimes you keep your foot on the gas even when you're going in the wrong direction. But I don't regret all that time, 6 years, and money, thousands upon thousands, I spent trying to make a singing career happen. That time helped me identify my weaknesses. Knowing my weaknesses helped me identify my strengths. I had to learn to tell the difference between a dream and a calling, and focus my life on following the calling, not chasing the dream. Just because I couldn't sing didn't mean I couldn't use my voice for good.
Mm-hmm, baby, I told Tyra after that changed song with the powerful voices wrapped up. I'm so happy you changed your mind. You're now focused on your gift, which is giving people opportunities they never thought they could ever have had. And I think for that, for your talking voice and power, one day when you're old and gray, and you will not dye your hair, for all that you did, you too will be called a legend.
All apologies. Real women know when to say sorry. So, here I go. Kobe, I messed up your solo rap debut. Pharrell and Wyclef, I wasted your time. Benny, you spent countless hours working with me on my singing strategy when you could have been spending more time with J-Lo. David Foster, sorry for keeping you tied up in your Malibu studio when you could have been hanging with your beautiful future supermodel family and watching the sunset. Babyface, you wrote that song for me when you could have been working on another hit for Whitney Houston. Disney, well, it's never too late. Happily Ever After. When The Princess and the Frog came out, I had a couple of the cutest little girls on my two-time Best Show Emmy winning, yep, it was my calling, talk show. The gist was that they could not afford to go to the movie, so we surprised them by taking their families on a plane to Disney World to see the movie and to meet Princess Tiana. At the amusement park, the girls were so excited and screaming and crying and hugging Tiana like her princess powers would rub off on them if they got close enough. I have to admit, for a second, I looked at that princess and thought, that could have been me. But then I snapped right back to reality. I was actually glad it wasn't, because Tiana, for me, was never meant to be. But Disney, if you ever need a princess who raps, well, holla at your girl. I even got a 9th grade rhyme I know by heart. You're still in the running. This book is almost done. Yay, you! But the love doesn't stop. Our love continues to pour down on you. That doesn't mean it's always going to be something you want to hear. Nope. It will be what you need to hear. And you might not like it all that much.
You might not like us all that much, but that's okay. We got that tough love for you, baby. Sometimes tough love hurts, especially when you're balancing both of us on your shoulders every darn day. But that's what makes you stronger. That's what makes you grow. You know?
I live in all mirrors you look into, reminding you that you are fierce, flossome, and ferocious.
I am the cheerleader out there shaking my pom-poms, urging you on when you feel it's too hard to keep on keeping on.
I am your ride-or-die chick who gives your self-doubt a drop kick and a bitch slap every time its dirty little butt sneaks into your head.
I am that extra mama you never knew you had, who always has your back and will shake you, wake you, but never break you.
I am your sister, from another mister who resides in every hallway you encounter, encouraging you to work it like a runway. So yeah, sometimes we're here to grab you by the shoulders and shake some sense into you. And sometimes we're here to hold your hand and rub your shoulders because we know what you're going through. And be warned, just because this is the end of the book, it doesn't mean it's the end of our story or yours. It's just the beginning. Why?